How's it going, folks? Welcome back to Tarot Talk. It's me, Brian, and we've got Joy here again. Glad that you could join us, Joy.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Okay, well, tonight we're going to start discussing the actual cards for the interpretation, and then possibly in the second hour we're going to do some readings. I'm also, if we don't get that many readings to take care of, what we're going to talk about is some different spreads. So what I'd like to do is I'd like everybody to have their decks set up so that they're split out into the various, oh God, I can't even think of the name.
Suits?
Not the court cards,
the
minor arcana and the major arcana, and then break it down by suits. So that you have the pentacles and the swords and the cups and rods. Tonight we're going to be talking about the aces, and we're going to be talking about the fool and the magician. So I'd like you to get those cards pulled out and be looking at them. And while you're doing that, I can talk a little bit about the program that I'm using tonight to talk to you about not only the cards, but that I use for my readings. It's a program called the Orphalese Tarot Program. Let me get the exact name here. Yeah, Orphalese Tarot. And it's a way of having digital copies of your tarot cards in your computer. It's a wonderful computer. I've reviewed it on my website, davinsjournal.com, and it's really, really handy simply due to the fact that I find that I can do a reading on the for somebody with this program without having to have the decks right there with me. You do have to register it, and I highly encourage everybody to go and register it if you do decide to purchase this. Because you get so many more features with the registered version. You can have however many decks you want, and you can use them all. In the free version, you only get three decks that you can use. You get multiple different spreads. One of them is, of course, the classic Celtic Cross. But there are specialty spreads that you can download and that you can install. That's what I'm going to be using to go through this. And the way I'm going to be using it is I've got four different sets of decks that I use on a regular basis, and each one of those decks has different nuances in them for interpreting the various cards, even though they're the same exact cards. And I'm going to be paging through those decks to take a look at what other nuances in these cards that we're going to be discussing tonight are. Okay, so if you've got those six cards pulled out, let's go ahead and go. First card that we're going to talk about tonight is the Fool. It is the very first major arcana card. It is basically the beginning place for everything. In a lot of books of interpretation, you're going to see people talking about how the major arcana is a journey, and it's a life path, and the fool is the person that is taking the journey. The fool doesn't mean somebody that is stupid, okay? The fool is somebody who is ignorant, and there's a massive difference there between stupidity and ignorance. Ignorance simply means you don't know, okay? Stupidity means that you have the opportunity to know, but you stick your fingers in your ears and go la 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 la, because you absolutely don't want to know. The fool is the typical innocent. Okay, he is somebody who has started out his life and has no experience in anything, to the point where he doesn't even know that falling over a cliff is going to hurt him. And if you look at the card, you're going to see that, yes, he's got a cliff there right in front of him. He's busy not paying attention to anything. He's playing his flute. He's walking along. He's looking at the sky. And he's so involved in himself and what he's doing and what he's looking at, that he doesn't notice that there's a cliff there, even though there's a little dog down next to him who's trying to warn him. Okay? This can be a significator for somebody who is an artist. It can also be somebody that is so self-involved that literally the rest of the world ceases to exist. Okay? And the fool's journey throughout the tarot is him learning various things from the different tarot cards. Let me see. I'm trying to think of other things that I could say about the fool. I mean, the fool is a pretty basic card. They're all, most decks number the fool as card number zero, even though he's the first card. So you get 21 numbered cards in the various spreads, whereas there's actually 22 because zero is a starting place. It is nothing. It is the off position for binary. It's off and one is on. And when you're a zero, you're all potential. You're no actuality. You're nothing that has been made manifest. But everything is possible. Now, one other thing that I thought was kind of interesting that was brought to my attention at one point was that if you turn a zero on its side and then give it a twist, it becomes infinite. So the same thing where the fool is all potential, he's infinite potential. It's not just a little potential. It's massive bursting amounts of potential that can literally, you know, take over everything if he's not careful. So that's the typical meaning of the fool. Now, if it comes up in a reading, generally it means somebody that's not paying attention. It can mean somebody that isn't innocent, like a child. It can mean somebody that doesn't know, is truly ignorant. It can be somebody who has not been exposed to something or been exposed to a danger yet. So they don't know that something is going on and that there's a possibility of injury or hurt or something along those lines going on. Brian, do you have anything to add?
Well, it occurs to me that the fool sort of represents that naive, like, kid just out of high school kind of thing who's eager to face the world but not entirely plotted out as far as where he plans to be or go, who's just like all eagerness and, you know, no knowledge, kind of a clueless, naive, spirited kid, spirited person with, you know, an openness to every new experience, but not kind of aware of what each potential outcome could be.
That is true. One thing that you mentioned is just out of high school. I would say probably a little younger than that, at least mentally, simply due to the fact that this is somebody that hasn't been exposed to something that by high school most people have been. He doesn't know that water's wet, you know, until you actually get your hand into it. And by high school, most people have already gone through that and understand that. So it can be, I guess, a simpleton, but that's not really accurate either. This is just somebody that hasn't been exposed to most of life. But, yeah, that same kind of bursting potential, not knowing outcomes, and what could happen from the actions. I know at 16 I wasn't very smart. Everybody told me not to get involved with this one school, and I insisted on doing it anyway, and now I'm $21,000 in debt. So, there's that. And it's the belief that you know it all already, and that there's, you know, you've already been exposed to all the situations that the universe could possibly throw at you, and you know everything. Like I said, the major arcana tend to be very archetype, and so they're very defined and cut and dried. And the Fool kind of typifies that in a lot of ways. He may have been exposed to some of the gross major versions of life lessons that he would be going through, but they're very black and white. They're very cut and dried. They're not nuanced and not subtle like starts happening once you get to 23 and get a job and you have a marriage and you're running around with kids and things like that, where the same life lessons are there, but there's all these other things along with them, so it kind of disguises that life lesson. You get very obvious life lessons when you're a teen. When you become a young adult and on into adulthood, they get very confusing because they come with a lot of other things. Okay, and so let's see. I'm looking through the various decks. Let's see. In the Rider-Waite deck, he's got a pack on his stick as he's walking along, which is, you know, typically it's the start of a journey. He's, you know, ready to go out into the world on his own, still with the same cliff. Let's see. In the Pagan Tarot, we've got a young lady who is walking in the universe, just in the starry sky, with a cat. So that's an interesting interpretation.
Sure.
In the Celtic Tarot, the Fool is represented by Fintan Mac Brocha, Fintan on the Hill of the Wave. Having been left as the only man of his people among many women, he ran away and hid in a cave. Thanks to this, he survived the flood and became immortal. By turning into an eagle, a salmon, and a falcon, he witnessed everything which took place on the Emerald Isle. Detachment from matter, travel, madness, and transformation.
Huh.
So, once again, you have the theme of detachment and starting out. And you have transformation as in, you know, learning new situations and changing yourself. And really, the Fool, I think, can also typify a crucible of experience starting out.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I don't remember where I saw it, but there's some comment in some book somewhere that says that the Fool's bag represents either the cup, because in most depictions of the Fool, he's carrying a stick and a bag, like a bindle, basically. So that he's carrying like the wand and the bindle, which is his cup, and you know he has all these other things. But what occurs to me is that the bag itself represents kind of the toolkit of the four suits. So that he's carrying the cup, the sword, the pentacle, and the wand. But hasn't learned how to make use of them in order to manifest his life.
Well, not to disagree with wherever you saw that, but I strongly disagree.
Okay.
Because this is starting out, and this is potential. And if the Fool's journey through the major arcana is actually a journey, then he doesn't have anything with him other than, you know, himself, his clothes, possibly his bindle, like you said, but he starts acquiring things in the next card, which is the Magician, and that's a perfect segue into that card, because the Magician is, if the Fool is all potential, the Magician is all actuality. He is the man who manifests from nothingness all of the minor arcana. He manifests the pentacle and the sword and the wand and the chalice, and they're all there on his table in front of him. And you can see his power, because any time in the tarot where you have an infinity symbol, especially an infinity symbol that's floating there, that is somebody with a great deal of psychic power and a great deal of magical ability. The magician is holding an infinity symbol in his hand. He's got, not in the Robin Wood deck, but in the Rider-Waite deck, one arm raised, and he's pointing to the table, and he's just manifest these four minor arcana, the four symbols of what is to come. A lot of people would say that these are the four elements of the earth, and they are related to the Western Hermetic elements. Pentacles are related to earth, swords are related to air, cups are related to water, and rods are related to fire. And there's, when we get into the aces, I'll talk a little bit more about that and why those associations are there. But the magician has just manifest these, and they're on his table, and he's offering them to the fool to take with him. Okay, so the fool, as he's starting out, doesn't have that, and he's only got a sack to put things into. I mean, I'm supposing that on that one deck, it could be seen that way, but in a general rule, that's not what the fool is representing or what he has with him. the rod that he's got with him, I don't know. The rod and the bindle in the fool, I would, you know, take to, remember the old hobo pictures with the guy that had the staff and the little kerchief that had his possessions tied up? That's pretty much what you got in the fool. In the magician, he's taken all of that, and he's met this gentleman who has a lot of power, who is, in fact, an actualization of himself. If the fool is the zero state in binary, the magician is the one state, the on, the potential manifest, everything that is possible for him to become, the magician is. In the Robin Wood deck, he is obviously a pagan priest. He's got, you know, his red robes on. He's got the deer and antler headdress on. He's standing in front of an altar. He's naked beneath his robes. I mean, if you look really closely at the card, you can barely see his skin all the way down the dividing line of his robe.
Never noticed it before.
Yeah, I mean, so if that's not a pagan priest, I don't know what is. His robes are red as to reflect, you know, the blood of the living. He's got a great amount of brocade on the robe itself. He's got a black and white candle in the background, one black and one white, which is on the side, which I find interesting because the arrangement with the candles and himself in the middle can be seen as the three pillars of the Tree of Life.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Yeah, and it can be because the magician is the middle pillar. The black candle is the left-hand path, the sinister path. The white candle is on the right-hand side. So if you work with the Kabbalah at all and the Tree of Life, there's that connection. She really went to a lot of detail in this. I love the rays of light that the candle lights are throwing off. And just as a shout-out, I use the magician as my deity representation for my deity, Hearn, because, you know, a horned god, the horned magician, I can't really see anything that would be more perfect for this. And paging through, let's see, I'm going to page through the other decks here and see what we got. In the Celtic tarot, the magician is represented by Lou Samaldanich. Samaldanich, I think I'm probably mangling the pronunciation. Somebody's going to yell at me. But Lu is the all-skilled. He's the Tuatha De Danann who showed up at the castle where the rest of the Tuatha De Danann were at and basically beat all of them at their own skills, even though they were as varied as chess masters and poets and shipbuilders and strengths. And he wound up becoming the leader of the Tuatha De Danann. Lu is somebody who is a master of all skills, and that's what Samaldanak means, is all skilled. So
that's typically what the magician represents, right? He, like, if the fool is the unknowing, kind of naive beginner at everything, the magician is the one who has, you know, endured years of training and, you know, just has those skills that he can summon to make use of in guiding the fool or in, you know, manifesting his own desires.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And there's some decks and some interpretations of decks say that the magician is actually the fool's tutor, that once the fool arrives to him and they start talking, he not only gives him the representations of the minor arcana, but he also starts teaching him how to use them and how to keep growing. So that's another little nuance. Now, let me very quickly grab my book that Robin wrote on the Robin Wood Tarot, and I should have grabbed this earlier. Where is that? Common Symbols, Major Arcana. There it is. Okay. According to her, she says the key to the magician is creativity. And that pretty much sums up the entire card in one word, is creativity, and I would add manifest. It's made to be there for everybody. It's somebody who can pull from the ethers and create something out of nothing.
Well, and for sure, and I think, too, that the magician represents in the sort of idea of Tantra and that sort of thing, or in Kabbalah, there's this idea of the active male principle that requires the combination with the sort of passive female principle, and that can be willpower combined with creativity, or it can be kind of like the male seed combining with the female womb and, you know, creating something out of, you know, their union. And I think that's what the balance of the candles as well represents. The idea of the polarities coming together as a necessity for manifesting creative power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something else that is discussed at various points. If you're going to see a polarity between male and female throughout the major arcana and throughout the minor arcana. I mean, we don't really have a third sex in Western society, and since the tarot decks are very much Western society created, you have male and female opposites constantly. So if you see one card representing X quality, it'll be with a man. You're going to see that same quality show up with a female somewhere in there. And usually you have to look for it. I didn't want to get into the priestess too much tonight, but the priestess is essentially the female magician, but not entirely. She has other duties that she does, and the magician has his set of duties. The fool, on the other hand, is kind of asexual. Right now, they're not one thing or another. He may be gendered as male, maybe gendered as female in some decks, but it's not really, once again, potential. Not sexually active, not masculine, not feminine. He's a very effeminate male in the Robin Wood deck again. So you have kind of a balance there.
Yeah, and one of the symbols that Robin, or that I guess Anthony Lewis suggests in Tarot Plain and Simple, is that the Fool card itself could be used as a significator for like a homosexual person. Because it's that person who is not distinctly traditionally masculine and not distinctly traditionally feminine. But, you know, at the same time, it's an important concept that manifests itself over the course of a lifetime rather than, you know, at the beginning of a life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was something really clever that was being said about the symbolism between male and female in the book that came with the Druidcraft Tarot. I'm just trying to find that right now, but it was something along the line of making certain that the interpretation of the genders represented in each tarot deck isn't specifically the idea of male versus female. It's not that kind of distinct gender polarity. It's more of a like a conscious versus subconscious, active versus passive, yin versus yang kind of thing. It's a balance of opposites, which in Taoism is seen as kind of necessary, like the active and passive principles interact, and it's in that mingling between them and not in their polarity that they represent the power to make things happen.
Oh, yeah. Anytime you have something along those lines, one of the things that I keep pointing out is that you can't have light without the dark. You can't have male without female. Because if you do have male without the female, then you just have a person. It is in the contrast of the opposites that you wind up having the opposites. So that's a really important point. It's not in having the opposites, but it's also, yeah, in the mingling and the interaction between the two that causes creativity to happen. So the magician can't, you know, create things on his own. He does have to have a female principle in there someplace. And I think that's where the high priestess comes in, and we'll get into her next week, along with the empress, I believe, is the third card, if I'm remembering off the top of my head.
It is.
Okay, because the emperor is after that. And so we'll be discussing two of the major ladies. And so that's that, with the major arcana. But like I said, yeah, you're going to have, male and female throughout the deck. And typically if you can find a quality in a male and it's very obviously a male quality, in the major arcana, you're also going to find that same quality in a female at some other point. It may be a diminished quality. It may be, a nuance that you have to dig for. For instance, the creativity comes of the magician shows up in the fertility of the empress later.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the idea isn't that one is exclusively existing without the other. It's kind of the necessity of the interplay, but shoot, I had this brilliant thought just moments ago, and I completely lost it. Okay, let's continue and pretend I have nothing.
I can sympathize. I did that last week. one thing that the Pagan Tarot is telling me is that with reversed stuff, with the reversed magician, it supposedly means unskilled, clumsy, insecure, disgrace, bad judgment, causes loss. And I can see how the reverse magician would be that. I would add into it that it is not necessarily bad judgment causing loss as much as bad judgment trying to create something and failing badly. Because remember, the reversals are not necessarily the opposite meaning. They are typically a bad nuance of the normal card. So the normal card is still going to be creativity. And with that in mind, a reversal interpretation is going to be that the magician tried to manifest something, something went wrong with the process, and the manifestation failed, but something was still created, and you still have to deal with that something.
Yeah, for sure. And in the Druidcraft Tarot book, the keywords for the card reversed are blocked flow and lack of will, or confusion of purpose. And I'm thinking back to the sort of idea of needing the polarities to combine in order to create something. And if you have a moment of like brilliant inspiration, but you lack the willpower to manifest, you know, whatever item you're driven to create from that, that's kind of what the reversed magician represents. It's like having that brilliant moment of like just absolute inspiration and then just kind of lacking that desire to, you know, put it into paper or sculpt it or paint it or whatever it is that you're doing to manifest that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Most definitely. That is a really good interpretation, too. Because, like you said, if you can have the most wonderful inspiration in the world, but if you don't have the willpower or the skills to be able to make it, then, you know, you might as well have not have had it at all. Same thing is you can have all the skill and all the willpower in the world, but if you don't have that spark of creativity, you know, it's for nothing.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, in the non-artistic sense, I mean, that what you could be dealing with is that dude that has like this brilliant like entrepreneurial idea, you know, and or not the idea, but rather the desire to manifest something that makes money, and you know, he wants to be a businessman of some sort, but he lacks the idea of what business to begin that will provide that opportunity for, you know, all that enthusiasm and, you know, desire to sort of turn into that profit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is there any questions from the chat room?
So far, seems not to be pretty quiet right now.
Okay. Well, don't forget, we do have the tarot chat going on in the Blogspot. You tell them, Brian.
Yeah, folks, if you're listening right now, on the Blog Talk Radio website for Woodwose Radio, there should be a chat box that opens up at the bottom of the episode so that you can, if you set yourself up with an account on Blog Talk Radio, or I think you can do it through Facebook, I don't honestly know, you can actually join in the chat and participate, ask questions, you know, talk to some other listeners, and of course interact with at least me. I don't know if Joy set up an account yet, but
no, I
you know,
haven't. I'm not in there. I'm dependent upon you.
No worries. Yeah, otherwise, if you have a question right now, you can call 646-564-9966 and I can actually take your question right now. Otherwise,
and don't forget that we are going to be doing some readings in the second hour, because I'm as skilled as I am, I don't think I can spend the discussion on how to do a Celtic cross spread out for an entire hour. So we're going to need somebody to come in and ask questions so that we can actually demonstrate some of these things. And actually do a reading live for some people. I think I have one person who's going to be coming so that I can do a reading for her, but I'm not positive about that. So if you want to get a reading done on some question that you have, please feel free to come along, jump in the chat, give us a call so that we can do that. Okay, so that's the major arcana for tonight at least. And that is, like I said, we're going to have 11 weeks of the major arcana because there are 22 cards. And at 2 a night, that's 11 episodes. We're going to turn now to the minor arcana. Okay. Now, as I said last week, the minor arcana are pretty much life as it is. If the major arcana are the archetypes, and they're the ones that are very obvious, very cut and dried, very black and white, the minor arcana are the nuanced versions of that. They combine usually two or more principles of the major arcana in each card. And it's different situations and different interpretations of those situations that the minor arcana wind up showing us. Most teachers, when they start discussing the minor arcana, are very careful to talk about suits. And they go ace, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, page, knight, queen, king, and then they start over again with the next suit at the ace, 2, 3, and on and so forth. The way I was taught is that the minor arcana not only relate to each other vertically, meaning in suits, but also horizontally in the one number of the minor arcana relates to each other.
Yeah, for sure. So I mean, the numerological significance of each suit or of each pip is like valuable to know in itself. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, so all of the aces mean one class of things. All of the twos relate to each other. All of the threes relate to each other. All the fours relate to each other. All the kings relate to each other. All the pages relate to each other. And once you understand that interplay, readings actually become a lot easier. The obvious vertical correspondences are, like I said, obvious. So I'm not going to discuss those that much. You'll pick it up as we talk about them. What I will talk about is the horizontal relations. And that's why I had to get all the aces out. A moment about the suits. Okay, the suits are pentacles, swords, cups, and rods. Okay, this has become in modern playing cards diamonds, spades, hearts, and clubs. Okay, the swords are spades, the pentacles are diamonds, the cups are hearts, and the rods are clubs. If you can remember the rod as club, because if you shorten down a rod, it becomes something to beat somebody with, which is what it is, and the cups as hearts, the rest sort of fall into place, okay? But as for the pentacles being transformed into diamonds, most pentacles have to deal with the earth plane. And one of the things that we're very concerned about on the earth is money. So anytime you see a pentacle, it's typically representing something with finances, something with the earth, something with us here. Whereas when you see a sword, that is usually representing air, because a sword moves through the air as you swing it at somebody. Okay, so it is cutting the air. This typically represents intellectual things, but more than that, it represents combat. Not just me fighting you because I'm angry at you, but me fighting a situation or me in competition with you for some goal or me trying to force myself and overcome something so that I can get what I want. Okay, it is any time you have a struggle, either within yourself or externally.
And it's kind of like, sorry, the swords is like a strategic approach to dealing with a situation. I like to call it the sword of truth, which, you know, cleaves through all the illusions that might block you from achieving what you want.
And, in fact, the Major Arcana card, Justice, has a sword. And there's a good reason that she has a sword. Not only is there the representation of the intellectual, but it's also that I'm thinking the sword of Damocles, but that's not what I'm thinking, what I'm trying to relate to. It's the sword that Solomon was going to use to cut the child in half to give to the two mothers to prove the truth more than anything else.
Sure.
Okay, and then on to the chalices, the cups. This typically represents water. Now, you know, water doesn't really have a form, so you have to give it a form with a physical object. Well, the cups are the physical object. If the swords represents the intellectual, the thinking, the cups tend to represent the mystical and the emotional. Okay? There's a number of people that relate cups to cauldrons. And I think in some of the Druid tarot cards and possibly some of the other pagan tarots, that cups becomes cauldrons. Because in Druidry, at least, they have a theory called the Three Cauldrons, where any physical ailment and emotional ailment and spiritual ailment is related to cauldrons. That's an entirely different discussion for another night, and I'm probably going to let Brian take care of that on Woodrose at some other point. But it's a fascinating study. This is the cups typifies all of that. Okay, but it's also a bowl. It's something that you can look into. It's something that you can gain nourishment from. It is a container for other things.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
From the, I think it's the Wildwood Tarot. They actually use, rather than cups or, you know, bowls or any specific kind of item, they actually call the suit vessels because they use different vessels in different cards, just because it's easier to fit into the scene if it's like a bowl as opposed to a cup or what have you. You know, whereas other suits or other decks might hold fast to the cup idea. You know, and it take a look at your own deck, get used to the idea of what each suit represents, because in the Wildwood as well, instead of the standard coins or pentacles, you've got stones. So instead of having discs in each card, you have like an archway of stones, or you might have a stone circle or what have you that, you know, is represented in that card, as opposed to the standard approach to pentacles being fitted into the artwork.
Oh yeah, and artists have a tendency to put their own interpretations and everything. And what they wind up doing is reinterpreting the standard symbols. So that's normal. You're going to find, especially on the Rider-Waite and some of those tarot decks that are based on the Rider-Waite, they hide things. They hide some of these arcana. When I know on the Two of Wands, they have a very obvious guy standing there looking out over a parapet at the ocean, and there's, you know, this huge vista, and you can barely see the two rods that are supposed to be the main symbols in the card. So, yeah, get used to looking for those hidden symbols. That's also another reason that you're supposed to work with the deck before you start reading with it, so that you can find those things. And speaking of rods, that's the last suit that we have. Rods typically, like I said, represent fire. But more than that, in the tarot decks, Rods represent passion and strong emotion, where cups tends to be emotions. It's more calm emotions. It's peace. It's centeredness. It is a willingness to look inside, whereas a rod usually is representing not just a fight, but a struggle, a desire to become better for yourself, an uplifting emotion, not anger so much as determination and stubbornness and a willingness to keep pushing forward no matter how hard things get. And that's, you know, typified. There was a line out of The Chronicles of Prydain by Lord Alexander, which is a children's book a long time ago, where the king is talking to the main character, and he says, where a crown bears one down, a staff lifts one up. And that's exactly the mnemonic I use for rods, because that's exactly what happens. A staff will help you. It's something that you can push on to keep yourself erect. Okay, and so that's the suits. Now on to the individual cards. Aces represent beginnings. In any type of journey, in any type of reading, you have a beginning point and you usually have an end point, even if it's as simple as birth and death. The aces are the beginnings, so they are very, very obvious. The Ace of Pentacles is obviously the beginning point for money. So it's typically referred to or interpreted as new money coming into your life. The same thing with swords, new combats, with cups, new loves, new emotions. With rods, it's new creativity, new passions coming into your life. And that is how they relate horizontally to each other. The individual symbolism on the Robin Wood deck kind of makes everything very obvious. She's wonderful at making the nuances obvious in her deck. For pentacles, she's got vines growing around the pentagram or the pentacle. It's in a garden. There's flowers blooming, so there's the new coming through with the representation of earth and the fertility of earth. Aces can be a new situation where you're maybe having a baby. I've seen it represent that, where you find out that you're pregnant, new fertility. With the Ace of Swords, it's got a helix of green wreaths around the blade, while the blade itself is in the sky. So there you have, new air. The double helix on that, however, is crowned with a laurel wreath for victory in combat. So it can be new victories, new situations where you triumph over something. Go ahead. Sounds like you want to say something.
I was just looking at the helix and kind of thinking, one looks like mistletoe, which I'm assuming would represent something along the line of like peace, sort of intellect, potential, and the roses, I guess, would represent purity because of their white color. So I think in this case, you're dealing with a symbol of kind of the balance of potentials that ultimately lead to victory. It also puts me in mind of kind of the Kundalini symbol rising up the spinal column that, you know, manifests in the opening of the crown chakra kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And it can. More the Kundalini and the biological energy I see more with rods, because that's a lot more obvious. The helix that she's mentioning is, let's see, I just had it, and of course I closed the book and set it aside. Where did that go? Okay, there's swords. 7, 8, 10. No, I'm going up. Okay, there it is. Let's see. She says the tip of the sword's crowned with a laurel wreath to show the fight was victorious. This is the champion's sword. From the wreath hangs an olive branch, meaning peace and fruitfulness, and a garland of white roses. I'm sorry?
Sorry, it just occurred to me that is olives as opposed to mistletoe.
Oh, okay. White roses are a sign of freedom of spirit and thought. They're pure and lovely, but not without the prospect of pain. These hang from the helix for two reasons. One is because it's the way which the snakes twine around the caduceus, however you pronounce that, symbol for medical knowledge. Knowledge, though it may bring pain, also brings healing, which is a good point. It's something that I hadn't thought of until I read that. But more than that, she mentions that this is a champion sword. It's somebody who has been victorious through a lot of fights, and it's something that is passed down from one person to another as an heirloom. In the chalices, in the cups, it's kind of interesting. She has an overflowing goblet, and if you're not aware that that is water that is flowing while the goblet, while the cup is floating in air, it can look like ice. So it can also represent a frozen state, a state of not moving. And if it were in a reverse reading, that's how I would interpret that, is the emotions aren't flowing. But at least in this one, the Ace of Cups tends to represent new love and a new situation. The day is dawning, and it's starting over, and you have new chances and new things to do. And she puts a big red heart on it. I mean, how more obvious for love can you get than that? It's in a beautiful garden, and the water is flowing out of the cup and running down the sides and down the stem and falling off of the bottom and watering the garden. With the rods, and I keep going back and forth and around on wands, rods, staffs, but they're called all three interchangeably, not necessarily by Robin, but by other deck makers. So that's something that you want to keep in mind. She has a double helix inside of the rod itself. And this is more where I tend to see the creation, the DNA of life, and the passion and the fire of life. Because life is warm. Your heart creates heat. Your body creates heat. So any physical form like that, anything that's alive is going to create heat. So this is where she represents that in this card, is the creation of life, the newness of life, the new growth is going to create the fires of passion. And that's how I've always interpreted this. And she has a couple of big old sun...
Sunflowers.
Oh my goodness!
The thing too with this particular depiction of the wand is that it's very clearly a phallic symbol because of the wand and the two sunflowers,
mm-hmm.
the twig and berries. Austin Powers would put it. but yeah, like it's a very fertile, direct, masculine, progressive, forward sort of suit. So in a reading, that's what you're going to be getting is that direct sort of forceful power that, you know, strives to make things happen.
And as you mentioned, yeah, it's very, like you said, male energy. The swords are very male energy as well. The Pentacles and the cups are very passive, receptive, female energy. I mean, because a pentacle lays there and a cup holds whatever is put into it. A sword is pointed and long. And like you said, the staff has and those depicted on it. I'm blushing here. I don't believe this. So you got the male and female dichotomy again there. So let's see. And once again, this is, you know, the beginning state. This is the one state. This is all the potential actualized, realized, made manifest. This is about as pure as the minor arcana ever get these. So if you need something that is a very direct representation of these symbols, the aces are what you're going to go to. So that's it for me tonight, at least what I have prepared. So if y'all want to listen to some music for a little bit while we get our scattered thoughts together and get some calls in, or get some people in the chat to talk to us, why don't we do that?
Sure. I will play Emerald
Sorry,
Rose.
I sprung this on him, guys.
No worries. I actually prepared a couple of songs for this purpose. So Emerald Rose, Castle of Arianrod.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I said in the second hour that we were going to be talking about a spread. And spreads are very important, at least as far as readings are concerned, because the spread is how you tie the readings of the different individual cards together into an actual oracular predictive tool. Your choice of spread really depends upon what you're trying to get answered. If it's a simple question, usually a 3 or 5 card spread is sufficient, just enough to get a yes or no. If you're actually going to be doing an explanation of a situation, you're going to want a more complex spread. I use several standard spreads. One is the 3-card, one is the 5-card spread, and I'm going to talk about those for just a little bit, but they don't really need much nuanced interpretation, simply because they are just there as a short, quick answer. Some books talk about, you know, drawing one card and using that to predict your day, and you can, and that's fine, but if you want a little bit more detail in what you're going to be facing, usually a 3-card spread is what you're going to pull, and that's just laying out 3 cards and interpreting them as they lie. Some people use 3- and 5-card spreads for a yes or no question, and that's really easy. You just look at the cards, and if they're positive, they're yes. If they're negative, they're no. Some people who use readings read reversed, they'll use how many are reversed versus how many are upright, in which case you get another binary situation where the reversed cards are off and the upright cards are on, and you just add them up. If it comes up to 0 or -1 or a negative number, then it's a negative answer. If it comes up to 0, 1, or more, then it's a positive answer to your query. But that's the easy version of those 2 spreads. A little bit more complex version is using those spreads as a timeline. You lay them out left to right. The left-hand side is obviously the past. The middle card is right now, and the cards to the right are the future. And you can use those as a timeline of what's going to happen. The further away from the middle card they are, the further in the future they are, or the further in the past they are. I've seen some readers take this to an extreme and lay out a line of 9 cards or 11 cards just to get a broader scope on what's going on over a period of time.
Wow.
But right now, what...
I said, wow, that seems like a lot of effort considering that a Celtic Cross is a 10-card spread on its own.
Yeah, it can be, but when you're talking about looking, getting a fast answer, and the middle card in an 11-card spread is probably going to be number 7, so you've got 6 cards to the left and... No, wait a second. It's going to be...
5 and 5?
Yeah.
With
it's going to be number 6 is the middle, which is the present. So you've got 5 to the left and 5 to the right. You can just look at the ones to the left and get a quick overview of what's happened. What most people are concerned is not how the situation brewed, but what's coming. So they'll look at the cards on the right, and a 5-card spread for a future reading is not that complex at all.
Yeah, for sure.
So anyway, okay, so to talk about a nuanced divinatory reading, the Celtic Cross is usually the go-to spread for everybody. I don't know a single reader who isn't familiar with this and who doesn't use it at least a little bit. There are some who use more complex spreads, some who use simpler spreads, some who arrange the cards differently, but the Celtic Cross is pretty much standard. If you have your cards in front of you, I'm going to go through and tell you the way I lay them out, and this is not standard for everybody. But the way I lay them out is I lay the first card in the middle, top up, vertically. That is the number one position. The next card I lay crosswise with the top pointing to the left. This is the number two position. Then instead of how a lot of spreads lay them out, I put the number three card to the bottom in the 6 o'clock position below those two. Then I deal to the number 9 o'clock position, then to the 12 o'clock position, then to the 3 o'clock position, so it makes a little circle around those first two cards. Then over on the right-hand side, I will lay the next four cards, starting at the bottom and going up. So 7, 8, 9, and 10 are from bottom to top on the right-hand side. Some spreads and some readers and some deck authors want you to lay a significator. If you do, it's going to be underneath the number one position, and that is the representation of the person that you're reading for. But the interpretation of this Celtic cross is pretty simple. The number one position is the person, the situation that the person is asking about, okay? What is going on? It's a clarification card, really, more than anything else. The number two position, laying crosswise on top of it, is called the crossing. This is what is one of the major hindrances of the situation. If it's a problem, this is a clarification of the problem. Okay. The number three position at the 6 o'clock position below, that is what I call the root of the problem. This is where everything stems from, okay? If it's a problem with money, you're going to see pentacles in there. If it's a problem with a work situation, you may see rods in there. But this is where everything, all the rest of the reading sources from, really. The card to the left in the 9 o'clock position is the number four card, and that is the past. And this is not a past of a long time ago. This is a recent past, and it's usually a past that is relating to the number one card and the number three card. So it's not going. So if it's going to be something that happened in the past that contributed to the problem or the situation, it could be something upwards to 10 years ago that's just now coming into culmination, but it's still going to be in the past. The card in the 12 o'clock position above the rest of the reading, that is obviously the present. What is going on now? And it's not necessarily what the querent is already asking about. This is something that they may not know is going on. This may be something that is affecting what the situation that is outside of them. And, of course, in the 3 o'clock position to the right, the number 6 position, that is the future. Typically, this is the near future, within the next 3 months or so. Because beyond that, it starts getting really confusing as to how much time you're dealing with, and the fact that your choices as you move through the situation are going to start changing that. It is not the outcome. It is simply what is coming up, so you can be ready for it. The commentary cards on the right-hand side, the 7 through 10, are the ones that you really want to look to for clarification, not only on the situation, but on what's coming up. The first six cards give facts. Okay, this is what the situation is. This is what the problem is. This is where it is stemming from. This is what happened. This is what is happening. This is what will be happening. The commentary cards on the right, however, are simply that. They are clarification. They are commentary. They are additional information that is relevant to the rest of the reading. It can be, in the case of two cards, this is opinion. It's not fact. The number 7 card, the very first one at the bottom, is the situation, what you see the situation as. Okay, your view on whatever the question is, how you see it, your interpretation of the events. The one right above that, number 8, is how others are seeing the situation. People around you who are not involved in the situation have their own opinions on what's going on, and this is what their opinions are about this situation. The next card, number 9, just above that, is your greatest help or hindrance. And this is a card that is telling you what tools you have or what tool you have that you can use in this situation to help manifest the number 10 card, which is the ultimate outcome, which I'll talk about in a second. But this is also a card that can be telling you what's holding you back ultimately, and it's an either or. I have seen several readings where the greatest help is also the greatest hindrance, because you're using this tool to help your situation along, but in the process of using this tool, you're damaging the situation further, kind of like using a nail to drive a screw. You can do it. You can do it with a lot of patience and a lot of very careful work, but you're going to mess the screw up. The number 10 card, the very last card, is the ultimate outcome. This is where you find out what is going to happen if nothing changes. It's not a guaranteed outcome. It is the most likely outcome given the circumstances, given what you know, given this reading, and given what you are doing to bring this about. Anytime with the Celtic Cross, I find that if a card is ambiguous, let's say the future card, the number 5 card, is kind of ambiguous as to what's going on, throwing down 3 cards as further commentary on that card and only that card tends to clarify the situation. And reading those 3 cards together can give you additional hints as to what's going on. And a lot of times if you say, okay, well, I've got this situation and I've got this card and it's being a little unclear and I'm going to put down 3 more cards and here they are, the person that you're reading for will go, oh, I know that. Okay, I understand what those 3 cards are representing. So it clarifies it for them too. That's why a lot of times when you do readings like this, you want to do a running commentary, an out loud, okay, this card represents this, and it's showing this symbol, and this symbol is jumping out at me, and it's showing me that I want to say this to you, because they can relate to that. It's also one of the reasons why it's very important to have the person there you're talking to with you. I get so much more feedback, and these readings are so much more satisfying when I'm actually talking to the person that's asking the question than if I were doing a reading and writing it down to send to them later. I mean, it may be just as accurate to write it all down and send it to them, but you get a better feedback and a more positive feedback loop when they're there to help you clarify and comment on various cards as they come up. Do you have anything?
Well, no, I think that you've covered that quite well, and I think it's important, too, that when you're starting out, you're going to want to spend some time doing readings with actual people sitting across from you, because it's kind of easier to gauge how you're reading the card, whereas if you try to, you know, jump on the idea of doing a reading for someone who's not present, it can be a little more awkward because you're going to sound more like you're reading out of the book kind of thing. Well, I mean, you understand that whole idea. I mean, the simple
truth
is
No, I agree totally. I know when I started in tarot cards back in 1987, while I was in the Army, a roommate, a girl that lived down the hall, actually, bought a Rider-Waite deck, and we were starting to play around with it and try to figure out things. And we were going to the book constantly because we would see the Eight of Pentacles, and the symbols would make absolutely no sense to us. So it was, what's the Eight of Pentacles? Okay, and look it up. And Eight of Pentacles, an apprenticeship. That doesn't mean anything. That symbol on that card doesn't, what? Huh? How does that relate? And
yeah.
It's also, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you. Go on.
That's also another thing that, another reason why you want somebody there to practice on, because you may see a symbol on a card, for instance, five brothers who are fighting with rods, and you might, you know, see that, and it might make no sense in the situation to you. You know, how do five people swinging rods around, hitting each other, mean anything? And you mention that out loud, and the other person is sitting there, and they're going, oh, yeah, well, I have five brothers. That makes sense. There's five people involved in the situation. Okay. You know, and so that's another way of getting feedback from them as to the card meanings and what's relative to the situation. Because there's times... Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just thinking that's another of those really helpful things when you're starting out. To remember that as you're doing a reading, what's obvious to you in the reading may not interpret directly to the querent as significant, because if you're understanding the card formulaically, then you may be missing out on nuances that are more directly relevant to that person's life.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to do when you're doing a reading, especially if you're starting out, is to have the person who's joined you for that reading sit down with you and look over the cards and see if there's symbols or colors or things like that that are pertinent specifically to their interpretation of the card, because that will affect how they understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is it's very necessary. Understand something. Any tarot cards, scrying with a crystal ball, using rune stones and rune casts, using the Ogham staves, any type of thing that you do with divination, even if it's as simple as a pendulum, this is not the tool that is telling you things. It is simply a way to focus your connection to everything and to get additional information down out of the ethers. The tool puts it in symbols because your subconscious speaks in symbols. That's where the dreams come from, and that's why dreams make no sense, because it's an entire language of symbols, and it's in the interpreting of those symbols where you get your information. Well, the tarot cards are nothing but a bunch of cards of symbols, okay? So using the tarot cards to divine what's coming up, it's not going to make sense just to look at a bunch of pretty pictures. Okay, somebody that has no concept of what these are, has no understanding of what the symbols are, they're going to be a bunch of pretty pictures. But to the reader who is listening in the language of symbols, the language of the subconscious, they're going to see things, and those things are going to speak to them, and they're going to give them mnemonics and little words and little bits of information that can be strung together into a coherent sentence for the person that's asking the question.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things that I've found really helpful in my own sort of exploration of the tarot, which kind of has been half-assed for a few years now, but is kind of getting familiar with psychology. If you can, you know, get out there and learn about how the mind works, I find it really helps with interpretation of the cards as you're reading. Because the tarot itself, because it's a symbol-based system, it's very relevant to explore the human mind as you're reading cards.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the understanding where the understanding of how the brain works when you're thinking and in life in general, and the language of the symbols, that is so important to understanding and being able to accurately interpret everything. And don't be afraid that if you're looking at the Eight of Cups, for instance, where he's walking away and abandoning everything, and the card is actually in the back of your head saying, no, I represent the winds of freedom and the chase of something new, not the abandonment of something like the card normally represents. Don't be afraid to say, tell the querent the chase of something new and the freedom of the road and the mystery of the nighttime, because that is probably relevant. There's probably a reason that you're getting that. I found over time, as I got used to my deck and how it reads and the personality of the deck and how my brain works and how my subconscious works, that if I need a specific symbol to represent something, no matter how weird the card is in the context of the rest of the reading, that card's going to show up where I need it to tell me what it is. If I need a party represented and a celebration in the middle of gloom, doom, and despair and the worst news I can possibly give somebody, the Three of Cups is going to show up every time because that's the party card. That's the celebration, the running around, the having happiness and joy. And it may not make sense in the context of the entire rest of the reading, but because I need that symbol to show up at that time to interpret this correctly for the person that's asking the question, it's going to show up. So don't be afraid to say something about that, because then that will probably be relevant for somebody else.
Yeah, for sure. And now that you mention the Eight of Cups, it occurs to me that that card, I mean, we can go extensively into each card as they come up, but that card is typically understood to be kind of one of those negative cards. But I think when you sort of explore it from certain perspectives, it could be in a particular place in the reading that speaks to you of leaving hard feelings behind you and moving forward in a relationship. Because a lot of people have this habitual need to hold on to their problems and their negative feelings about other people. And that card can also be interpreted as a choice to let the past be the past, you know, leave bygones be bygones so that you can move forward and progress in your own life.
Yeah. And once again, we're going to get into the details on the cards. Like I said, these are nuanced cards. The Minor Arcana are always nuanced because they represent life. They don't represent pure states of stuff like the Major Arcana do. And in the Robin Wood deck, the Eight of Cups specifically has eight cups stacked up and a guy walking away from them at night. He's seeing a road in front of him, and he's traveling down that road towards the distance, and he's leaving all these cups behind him. So that can represent, yes, abandoning things. It can represent leaving the past behind you. It can represent moving on. It can represent a scary situation that you're going into, because most people are afraid of the night. But there's, other spins that can come with it. Like I said, the freedom of the road, moving into a new situation, starting over. And those are positive spins. Just about every card can be positive or negative depending upon how it comes up in the reading and what other cards it's associated with.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, too, as you're studying the tarot in the beginning stages, take advantage of things like numerology, you know, get hold of some symbol books in your library or what have you. Take some time to pick those cards apart and examine each one, you know, as an individual card. Because if you look at the book by Eden Gray, which, you know, it goes by several titles. I've seen like three or four of them. But it's the same book inside. And that book picks apart the Rider-Waite tarot into specific colors and flowers and animals and things that are in each card that represent different aspects of the psyche or different potentialities for a reading.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be afraid to pick the crap apart of, you know, each card as you're learning it, because it will help you down the road, especially if you can start interpreting particular things in a more modern context, because you're going to deal with a lot of querents coming up who look at those cards as this, you know, arcane, irrelevant system. So what you want to be able to do is to interpret suits and, you know, colors and ideas coming up in the cards in a modern context that will suit that person. If you're dealing with an artist, you want to be able to be pertinent with, you know, someone who's living an artistic life, you know, someone who's spiritual, someone who's more business-oriented or family-oriented, that sort of thing. You want to be able to, like, bring those cards to life for that person.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to put your own interpretation on these also. Remember, all of the cards and most of the symbolism that are in the cards was codified centuries ago. These came out of Egypt and out of the gypsy camps, and a monk for the Catholic Church put most of the modern references for these cards in his interpretation of them. So you're going to have situations that are represented in the cards that may not actually look relevant anymore, but you can relate it to modern day. For example, the Hierophant is essentially a priest, a Catholic priest, who is very staid, very hidebound, very this is the way things are. But it's a Catholic priest, and at the time, the Catholic Church was, you know, the power in the world. So it represented, you know, a government, a power that turned inward on itself and was very vested in keeping things the way they are. Okay, well, that's not necessarily the same thing anymore. The Catholic Church isn't necessarily like that, although they can be at times.
Yes.
But there are so many situations in our lives where that archetype, that idea is still there, is still prevalent, is still part of our lives, that the card is still relevant. So it's up to you as the reader to relate this old, you know, medieval priest into modern times for the person that you're reading for.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, the Hierophant can represent an old codger set in his ways who's unwilling to hear any opinion that's different from the one he's established. It's like holding fast to the old way of doing things because it's comfortable that way. People are afraid of change. You know, you've got a card that sort of sees the world in this very fixed and rigid state, whereas you might have a card come up that's more lively and vibrant, that speaks to the notion of adventure or of travel. One of my favorite cards in every deck has always been the Six of Swords, which is kind of, you know, this stage of transition from one aspect, like one form of living to another. I think it's something that people tend to overlook nowadays. You know, the rites of passage that each of us experience as we're growing from childhood to adulthood, they're not as bluntly set out so that, you know, people know that this period of time is over so that they can move forward, because you get people coming out of high school who are still desperately trying to be teenagers as they're moving forward into college and, you know, adult life, where their priorities have to change. And, you know, so, I mean, each card can be looked at, you know, from different perspectives. And you'll find that when you're sitting down with a person, a young person especially, there's going to be things that come up that, you know, talk about old ways of doing things or new things or creativity or what have you. Take a look at it from your own life. Like, examine the person as an individual, but don't be afraid to draw on your own experience as well, because each of us goes through those stages of life, first love and that kind of thing. So, you know, if, as you're interpreting a card, there's something that comes up out of it that makes sense for you to use an example of your own life, by all means, don't be afraid to do that. It may not make sense directly interpreted, but if it brings up some analogy or some story from your own life, then that may relate better for the person asking the question.
And when you're dealing with somebody that's asking a question, you're there for them. As Brian said, you got to make sure that you relate it to them in such a way that they can understand it. But do strive to make sure that your focus is always on their story and what's going on. Use examples out of your own life, definitely. I mean, you'll hear me throughout the course of this set of podcasts using examples from my life to relate something to you, and that's something that you do. But you always want to keep in mind that the goal is to interpret what the cards are telling you in the context of their question.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is a reading done for them. You know, again, feel free to do readings for yourself, but I think, too, that if you make it a habit to do it every day for yourself, it can become kind of a crutch for yourself. You may not be, like, if you're the type who develops those compulsive habits, you may want to take a step back and do it maybe once a week, because if you end up doing it every day, then you're going to start developing this dependence on the readings that you do in order to make every decision of your life. And that can be a really negative way of letting the cards impact your life.
Which reminds me of an Arthur episode where they had a cootie catcher. And it was supposedly this massive predicting thing. And it got to a point where the kids couldn't make a decision to go to bed without consulting it and asking for permission to go to bed, even when they were so tired they couldn't keep their eyes open. So, yeah, that's...
Yeah, I mean, but otherwise, by all means, I mean, learning your tarot deck, whatever deck it may be, is... You're going to be wanting to spend the time with each card, with doing readings for yourself, getting used to the symbolism in your own life, being able to interpret the relevant symbols in each card for yourself so that you can relate them to someone else's questions. And as you're doing a reading, you're going to get a lot of feedback in the process. Something that you say a card represents may not be clicking with that person. So what you're going to want to be able to do then is to kind of approach it from a different tack. Maybe it's the way that you're interpreting that symbol that doesn't make sense to them. But if you are familiar with a wide variety of things that each, you know, each card or symbol or color or whatever can represent, then you're going to be able to say, okay, it's not the miser in the Four of Pentacles that's really relevant to the issue. The idea is the need to save, or, you know, the unwillingness to spend the money on going to school so that this person can, you know, advance their career or what have you. It's about taking the symbols and being able to separate them from the general meaning of the card.
At first you're not going to be able to do all of that. You're going to settle for a while that it's enough that you can actually interpret the card without leaning on the book. So, and that's fine. This is stuff that comes with experience. And the more readings you do, the more you play around with the cards, the more you meditate on them. Because I found that was a really strong tool in my box to actually sit down with the card and think about only the Six of Wands and meditate on what those symbols mean to me. And the more you do that, the more relevant they're going to become, the easier the symbols are going to come through, the more symbols you're going to see, which is also another reason why you want to get the books that come along with them and see what the author meant and the artist meant when they developed the deck.
Yeah, for sure. And if you can get a hold of books that discuss the significance of colors, if you happen to own like something like a color healing book, or a book that addresses magical correspondences of different colors, that's going to help you flesh out the color relevance in each card. If you take the time to tack on a bit of numerological knowledge, that can help a lot too, especially as you get familiar with each card in the Major Arcana, because while the connection between them may not seem obvious, two cards as conspicuously different as the Lovers and the Devil, or, you know, whatever the Devil is represented by in your deck. I've got one where he's Cernunnos. You know, basically, the idea is that in the traditional Rider-Waite deck, the Lovers are obviously a male and a female. In the Devil card in different decks, what you've got is usually a male and female person in there who are related somehow. And a way you can interpret those two cards, because they both numerologically represent a six, they have that connection. And you can see the Lovers card as that positive manifestation of love, you know, the healthy relationship kind of thing, whereas the Devil card represents kind of that unhealthy, clingy, codependent kind of relationship, because the Devil card itself represents kind of
bonded
a choice that you've made.
Material.
Yeah. It's a choice to be bonded to a situation that you could easily let go of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that, I mean, you could spin off into a Buddhist perspective on that, where, you know, that requires you to sort of meditate on the situation, the relationship, and allow yourself the freedom to let go of it because it's destructive. You know, so, I mean, all the sixes and all the cards that numerologically break down to six can be looked at as falling along the same lines. So don't be afraid to, you know, get familiar with numerology as well.
And one thing I'm going to caution against is there's a lot of books out there that purport to tell you the secrets of the tarot and what they mean and everything. 99% of those are just restating the basic symbolism that Levi came up with back in the 17th century. It's not the tarot is fairly easy and very, very complex in that the basic symbols are real easy to understand. Everybody has the bitch in their life. The one lady that can't help meddling and can't help telling you what to do, whether you pay attention to her or not. Okay, so getting the Queen of Wands or the Queen of Swords is not a surprise when you're thinking about that person. Okay, there's no secret to it. But it's the nuance that come with experience that's really going to tell you, okay, now is this my maiden aunt who is really nasty about it, or is this my grandmother who actually has my my best interests at heart? And that's where the difference is. That's where the real secret of the tarot lies, in that interpretation of the main point, the main symbol that's being presented to you, and the listening to the back of your head to hear what is actually being said instead of what you're reading into the card.
Yeah, for sure. Once you're familiar with your deck, don't be afraid to rely on your instinct and intuition as opposed to the holy writ of the book itself. Because you're going to find that different books will expand more broadly on each card. That's why I like the book that was written by Anthony Lewis, spelled in the traditional ways for both names. It uses Robin Wood's deck, and it's called Tarot Plain and Simple. Now, each card is discussed from its numerological meaning, but it's also expanded on quite a great deal with keywords and phrases, with a situation and advice, like commentary, and it talks about the different people that each one represents as well. So, I mean, if you're dealing with, say, the Four of Wands, if you're the type who uses it reversed, it can represent inhibited people or those who provide poor service. Upright, it can mean happy, content people on vacation, new home buyers, you know, social situations, bar mitzvahs, graduation, what have you. So, you know, like that book can be related to any other deck. You just have to be kind of familiar with what each card looks like before you use it, obviously. So don't be afraid to use the books for other decks with your deck, even if they're not the same, because what you'll find is that each book fleshes out the cards that are relevant to you.
Because,
I mean,
six tarot books sitting here in front of me, each one of them for a different deck. It turns out I do have that Eden Gray book that you were talking about. In my hand, it's called The Tarot Revealed. I've got the tarot book for Robin Wood, and I've got a book on the big book on the Morgan Greer deck. And all of them say the same basic things for the different cards, but each one also has the nuances for that deck that the author and the artist intended when they were putting it together.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the interesting things is that temperance is this card that's often bluntly interpreted in each deck as moderation, balance, that kind of thing. But there are some decks where the commentary is more along the lines of the blending of conscious and subconscious, the blending of like the purity of one, like the masculine and the feminine to manifest something. So Not only do you have like the magician in each deck that represents all of those things, but you've got Temperance, which talks about an alchemical combination of the Hyros Gamos, the Great Rite, as it's known in Wicca, you know, as being a necessary blending of two opposites for the production of whatever's to result.
And when I first learned it, I tended to relate that one to tempering, as in a flash situation where it you get this metamorphosis from a state of two things that are put together into a fusion of one.
Yeah, for sure. Like kind of in blacksmithing, it would be like the combination of I don't know, fire and, you know, metal.
Don't worry
or
about
something.
It. No, I think everybody got what you were saying.
But
also remember that with Temperance, at least in the Robin Wood deck, one of the most telling things that I saw in there was Temperance is shown as moderation, but that also includes moderating moderation. There are times when you need to go wild. There are times when you need to lose your temper. There's times when you need to go out and get blind drunk and fall down and vomit in somebody's boot. There are times and places for all of that. There's a time and a place to be moderate and to be temperate and to not go to extremes. But there's times to go to those extremes too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you've got to be willing, you know, in the course of your life to balance out both, like, that wild abandon and, you know, I mean, in sort of Greek mythology, you're dealing with the difference between the Dionysian approach and the Apollonian approach to life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that, like, drunken wild man versus the very calm, reserved intellectual who's, you know, focused on getting his shit done kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, go ahead.
Okay, well, I was just about to say we've got about 7 minutes left. Is there anything from anybody in the chat, anybody holding for a reading?
Not at the moment. Unfortunately, the listener that was in the chat room was there basically to tell me he couldn't listen to it live because he's had this problem with Blog Talk Radio before. So he's messaged them and told them that. But he was just hanging out in the chat kind of to shoot the breeze, I guess.
Hopefully when people download this and start listening to it, they'll realize that, yes, we do want questions. It helps us. The feedback from you helps us clarify what we're trying to say and how we're trying to say it. If you ask a question, it may be something that we hadn't thought of to talk about directly, but your question will prompt us to be able to expand on that, and other people will learn from it too. So, yes, please, come along.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you've got questions about particular cards as we go through them, feel free to ask us about them so that we know that someone's curious about symbolism in one card or what have you, because we can only approach this from our own experience. And if you have something that we haven't even thought to address, it may be because we've just never had someone ask about that before. So don't be afraid to be that, you know, that unique individual or to ask something that we may have heard 1,000 times, because it's relevant for you to know this right now. So, you know, if you need to know that, by all means, ask. That's how you learn.
Yeah, plus it may be something that we know and we think everybody knows that may not be obvious. So we need that feedback so that we can present the information to you so that you learn, so that it becomes obvious to you.
Yeah, for sure. Because,
so,
I mean, if you're going to pick our brains, I mean, each of us has different experience and, you know, a plethora of other information to draw on that, you know, might be really invaluable for you, but because it's not something that we typically associate with tarot, It may not ever come up in the course of, you know, our discussions each week. So, if you want to bring that up, by all means.
Yeah, for instance, not only with the tarot is kind of a sideline for me. My main spiritual thrust, if you will, is as a priestess. I'm a Wiccan, ordained Wiccan priestess, high priestess in Sayax Wicca. I'm also a druid, and I've been doing this for 20 years now, learning from all sources that I could. So, yeah, if you're curious about some aspect of something that is relevant to the tarot study, to paganism, please come and ask that. I have no problem with answering those questions, just as long as we realize that the main thrust of this podcast is the tarot, and we can get back to that and relate it back into the tarot lesson for the night.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, in February, we're going to start up with a weekly podcast Wednesday night. It's called The Witching Hour, which starts and ends at the same time as this one.
Cool.
So, we'll be able to go into all that kind of stuff as well. But again, don't be afraid to ask our own histories, because, I've delved into a pile of stuff, over the past 25 years since I was a kid. And Joy's done the same. If we don't know something, we may be able to direct you to a resource that will help you.
Mm-hmm.
There might be websites or books that either of us knows about that will help you along your way. So, I'd love to see this being a very interactive kind of show, because it's you, the listeners, that we're doing this for, not ourselves. Because, I could stare at a wall and talk to myself for days if I really felt like it, but it's not helping.
And I know all of this stuff. I don't need a refresher on it.
Exactly. So don't be afraid to poke your head in with questions. Set up an account on Blog Talk Radio so you can jump into the chat with us.
You can email your questions to me. I'm on, I'm online, most places on Tumblr. I'm known as wide-worlds-joy. I've got an email address, joy.a.philip@gmail.com. Send me your questions. I've got my website, davinsjournal.com, all one word, no apostrophe. You can also get there through aaronsjournal.com. Send us your questions. Talk to us. We don't bite hard, unless you're into that, and in that case, you should email us privately. And I think that's going to be the end of it tonight. So next week, I'm going to be talking about the High Priestess and the Empress, as well as the number 2 cards in the Minor Arcana. So have those pulled out. Get ready to go through them. I'm probably also going to be talking about another couple spreads. I'm not sure which ones, because the Celtic Tarot or the Celtic Cross is pretty much the go-to spread. Talked about the 2 and 3 card spread. I'll probably talk about what's called the astrological spread, which is a very, very complex spread. It uses every single card in the deck. So I'll talk about that next week. Brian, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, for sure. Folks, if you want to send a question or comment to the show, you can email us at woodwose.radio@yahoo.ca. Get the spelling off the website. It's woodwose.radio@yahoo.ca. You can hit us up on the podcast Tumblr blog at woodwose-radio.tumblr.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Join us next week, same time, and see you guys next week. Have
Blessed
a good night,
everybody.
Namaste, everyone.